Okay, it's time to start on bonds. Stodgy bonds, boring bonds, reliable bonds. In fact, long before the movie Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, Andrew Carnegie, the industrialist from Pittsburgh, steel magnate, said gentlemen prefer bonds because they are far more reliable, far less risky and volatile than stocks. That doesn't mean we don't have problems with them, but they're just you're going to sleep a whole lot better when you invest in bonds. Now, are you going to eat? Well, maybe not usually. And the book goes into so much detail on bonds as to take a boring subject and really make it painful. So all you have to understand and remember is what we cover in the presentation, okay? Because what we do is we pull from chapters 9, 18, 19, 20, which is just it's just too much. So make sure you understand what's in the presentation, okay? And then the calculations, that'll be in chapter 10. That's coming up next. Let's get started. Slide number 2. What are bonds? Well, they are securities, which means they are traded, negotiable, publicly traded, long-term debt. You're a loaner. When you invest in bonds, you're not an owner as you are when you invest in stocks. You are loaning your money. And the issuer, the corporation, the municipality, the state or local government, the federal government, they are borrowing money from you, the investor. And they agree to pay you a fixed amount of interest over a specified period of time, and then to repay that amount, that loan, at the time that the bond matures. They agree to repay the principal. We call bonds fixed income securities, fixed instruments, or just fixed. People just call them fixed investments. Why? Because we know how much we're going to get. It doesn't change. The interest rate doesn't change. There are a few bonds that are sometimes called floaters that they change their interest rates. But no, in general, no. Bonds do not change their interest rates. So you are lending your money to the government, I mean, state and local government, the federal government, a corporation, and in turn you're going to get interest and the principal. You become a bank, kind of like, kind of same idea. Slide number 3. The trust indenture is the contract that sets forth the terms between the issuer and the bondholders. You can think of it like a mortgage contract. When you enter into a long-term loan, buying a house, a mortgage, there is a huge contract that you sell. Well, that's the same thing is true with bonds. There's a trust indenture that describes your rights and the issuer's obligations, and there's a trustee that is appointed to oversee that the obligations are carried out. For example, the bonds that Southwestern Community College sold, the loans we made to fix up the campus. You saw our new stadium. We didn't hold a bake sale, folks, to build that stadium. Several million dollars. We had to borrow the money. Well, there's a trustee to make sure that those bonds were used for what we said they were going to be used, and that was to fix up the campus. That's in the protective covenants, the obligations of the bond issuer to keep doing business, to keep equipment in good working order, to make payments on time and the like. In our case, we weren't allowed to throw a party with that money or give ourselves raises. We had to say, we had to do what we said we're going to do. Build the math building, the math science building, the fitness center. There was supposed to be a kitchen in there for the culinary arts. It somehow disappeared, so I don't know what happened there. But still, there's somebody who watches over the government, the entity, the corporation, and make sure they do what they're supposed to be doing. Slide 4. Why? Why? Well, why would you invest in bonds? Well, we've already made mention. Why are bonds useful to investors? Well, because they're very reliable. The interest is normally paid during the life of the bond. In the United States, that's usually every 6 months. Bonds typically pay every 6 months. The principal is returned when the bond is redeemed, and the bonds, we'll get to a certain slide. Bonds normally are more than 10 years old, but 5-year bonds are not really bonds, but that's okay. Anything past 1 year is considered a bond, even though technically it's not. And then there is potential for a capital gain or a capital loss. What? If interest rates fall, there is a potential for a capital gain, but there's also a potential for capital loss if interest rates rise. Why? It doesn't make any sense. How can a loan change its value? Which we're going to spend a whole lot of time on this. Relax, dear students, because this is the trickiest part of bonds, is the inverse relationship of interest rates and bond prices. But if you buy the bond and intend to hold on to it until it matures, you don't care. You need capital gains, capital losses are not an issue to you. There are some bonds that offer tax advantages, which we'll discuss when we get to municipal bonds. And then some bonds can be converted into stocks. Huh? Convertible bonds? Sounds exciting, isn't it? No, not really. We will discuss those later at a later time, because they're a part of what we call hybrid securities. And they're really not that exciting. The idea is to offer the best of both worlds, you know, the best of stocks and the best of bonds, and they also offer the worst of the disadvantages, the worst of both worlds. So, we'll discuss those later. Slide number 5. Bondholders are first in line for repayment if there is default on the loans. Well, not really. You got to pay the taxes if any taxes are owed, but usually if a corporation is in trouble and they're not paying their bonds, they don't owe any taxes. They've lost money. They have to pay payroll, right? They have to make sure they pay the employees. Who's at the back of the line? Right, the stockholders, right? They're usually the last in line, and they're usually completely left with nothing because the bondholders get to pick the carcass first. Bond prices are far less volatile than stocks, but bond prices still fluctuate, folks. Bond prices can go down and do go down when interest rates rise. When interest rates fall, bond prices go up. We'll discuss these in detail. We'll discuss this phenomenon in detail, and it is the trickiest, as I said, trickiest part of bonds. Now, what are the average returns over decades? Maybe I should reduce this, because we used to believe that we could get 4, 5, 6% for bonds, and some bonds would pay 7 or 8%, but bondholders used to expect 5, 6% on the whole over time. But guess what? Bonds are paying far less than that now. Far less. They're at their historical lows, right? And so there are a few that are paying more, but they're very risky. So maybe we should change this from 4 to 8, maybe to, I don't know, 2 to 6 or something, 2 to 5, because this last decade, bonds have not been paying very well in interest. And they'll go back up again, really? I mean, the economy globally is doing okay. It's recovering from the Great Recession, from that heart attack that our economy had, the global economy, I should say. Aren't interest rates going to go up when everything gets a lot better? Well, we'll see. But I think they will, unless the world ends, in which case it doesn't matter. Slide number 6. By far, dear students, the most misunderstood feature about bonds is their inverse relationship with interest rates. And if you're looking on slide number 6, you will see the seesaw, you know, the sube y baja, right? And this is an excellent analogy, an excellent metaphor, in that this is how it works, folks. When interest rates fall, bond prices rise. And when interest rates rise, bond prices fall. It's an inverse relationship. So This is by far the part about bonds that confuses people the most. Even people in the industry get tripped up by it. So I want you to remember that image of the seesaw. Interest rates go down, bond prices go up. Interest rates go up, bond prices go down. Because I'm going to ask you this 3 or 4 or 5 times on the exam, okay? Make sure you know this. Because remember, you are the investment guru for your friends and family and coworkers. You can't let them down. Slide number 7. Over the long term, stocks have outperformed bonds. Okay, so why would you invest in bonds, right? Well, stocks are far more volatile. They carry more risk, right? And bonds offer an element of stability to your portfolio. So it's the old, do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? For some investors, stocks are simply too risky. They want to sleep well. And they reason, if I can obtain my long-term goals without taking on the risk of being invested in stocks, so be it. I can sleep better at night. Bonds also make good intermediate-term investments, 2 to 3 or 4 years or 5 years or so, where stocks are 5 years or longer. And sometimes, folks, bonds are just screaming good deals. Sometimes interest rates are quite attractive, and you just, I want to buy some bonds. Not now. Interest rates are not, but sometimes they are. Slide number 8. What are some of the risks? Well, remember, every investment has risks. It doesn't matter what kind of investment it is, it has some kind of risk. And bonds have interest rate risk and purchasing power risk. Interest rate risk is the risk that if rates fall, bond prices will rise. Well, that's not a risk. That's a great thing, right? But the opposite is true. What happens if interest rates rise and bond prices fall? Well, if you intended to sell your bonds right before that happened, or right as that is happening, you will be hit with the interest rate risk. Of course, if you have no intention of selling your bonds, you're just going to collect the interest and then get the principal when it is repaid, you don't care. It doesn't affect you. Purchasing power and risk is sometimes called inflation risk. This is the risk that your purchasing power will fall if inflation outstrips your return. You're getting 1 or 2 or 3%, inflation's running at 3 or 4 or 5%, you're actually losing money. I know it's hard to believe because you don't see the value of your investment go down, but relative to what it can purchase, yes, and inflation is the bondholder's worst nightmare. The last risk on slide 8 is the business risk, the default risk, the financial risk. And certainly this is a serious issue, but it just doesn't happen that often, folks. It doesn't happen. It's not like when you lose a lot of money in stocks. Most bond issuers pay their interest rates. Most bond issuers pay their principal, just as most people pay their mortgages and pay their car loans. Now, there are defaults. Let's not kid ourselves. Sometimes companies go under, but there's usually plenty of warning before that happens. Big companies will, long before the bonds become junk, will show signs that, hey, maybe it's not a good time to hold these bonds. And then they become what are called junk bonds, distressed bonds, speculative bonds, non-investment grade bonds. And we'll discuss that. This is much less of a risk with munis and treasury bonds. Certainly the United States Treasury has never gone bankrupt. And I don't care whatever they say on right-wing radio, the United States is not going bankrupt, folks. We have a serious deficit problem, yes. We're going to deal with it over the next 10, 20, 30 years. Yes, we are. And some munis have gone under, but they're very, very far and few between. Detroit, Stockton, San Bernardino. But for the most part, no. Most companies pay their bonds, most munis and all treasuries pay their bonds. Liquidity risk. Well, this is an issue with bonds. Not with stocks, folks. There's always somebody who wants to buy your shares. But the liquidity risk with bonds is more of a problem for people who want to buy the bonds. Because But it turns out that people mostly buy bonds and just hold on to them for the income. They're just happy to get the income. So they don't trade as often. So if you're trying to sell your bonds, there might not be people who want to buy it, but the reverse is true. Usually it's people want to buy them and there's not enough of them, right? So it can be a problem, but not really. Somebody's going to want to buy your bonds if they're high quality. If they're not high quality, then yeah, you might have a liquidity problem. And then the prepayment risk, the call risk. What? Well, think about it, folks. If you have a mortgage at 6 or 7% now, yes, you could go out and refinance for a lot less. And that's what happens with bonds. The bond issuer, the company, the municipality, might say, you know what, we can get a whole lot better deal now if we call in our bonds, if we prepay our bonds and refinance. Now, some bonds are non-callable. The entity is forced to continue to pay and cannot call them away. And we'll discuss the call feature in detail a little bit later because it's a little tricky, but not really. They're just refinancing. But you are the bank now, remember. So they're pulling away your loan and paying you back, which is great. You get your money back, but boy, it usually means you have to take a lot less return on your money because you were getting great interest rates, and interest rates have fallen, so now you get your money back, you got to buy new bonds, and they're not paying as well. Slide number 10, the coupon. Coupon? What is coupon? Well, this is the nominal rate, the named rate, the coupon yield, the nominal yield. This is the feature of a bond that defines the amount of annual interest income. In other words, this is what the bond is paying in interest. And as we said, they normally pay every 6 months, although there are some that pay every month, quarterly, once a year, but mostly all bonds pay every 6 months. Now, where's this coupon coming from? Well, the term coupon rate came from the fact that bonds used to have coupons attached to them. They were called bearer bonds, and on the website and on Canvas, I think, there's a link to images of bearer bonds, of these old bonds where every 6 months you'd clip a coupon, literally clip the coupon, put it in an envelope with your name and address and send it off, and they'd send you back a check. Yeah, they're gone, folks. They're long gone, right? But to this day, earning interest from a bond is often called clipping the coupon. Even though all transactions are done electronically, it's still in the language. It's still linguistically used. So you've got to understand, like, what is he talking about, clipping a coupon? Yeah, that's what it means. It means earning your interest, the coupon rate. But another name, nominal rate, the named rate. That's actually a little better rate, but you're going to hear people use coupon rate. What's the coupon rate? Slide number 11, the principal. That's the amount of capital that must be prepaid at the maturity. This is the face amount of the loan, the par value, the face value. And most bonds are sold in $1,000 increments. Now, there are a few that are $5,000 and $10,000. Folks, in this class, just to make life easier, we will always use $1,000 bonds, okay? We know that there are some others that are $5,000 and $10,000, but we're not going to deal with them. Everything will be $1,000 bonds, all right? So putting the coupon rate and the principal together tells you how much interest you will receive each year. So, for example, a coupon rate of 7% and a principal of $1,000 gives us $70 of interest each year, right? If it's a 9% bond, it'll give us $90. If it's a 3% bond, it'll give us $30. Now remember, that's every 6 months, so it's $30 divided by 2, $15 and then $15, or $35 and $35 for 7%. And since almost all bonds are denominated in $1,000 increments, knowing the coupon rate gives you the amount of interest. Therefore, normally, bond investors simply refer to their bonds by the coupon rate and the maturity. I bought a 7% 30-year bond. Make sense? So you know you're going to get 7% for the next 30 years, unless the bond is called away from you, in which case they give you your $1,000 and shake your hand and say, thank you very much, we're not going to pay you 7% anymore. We've refinanced the loan. Slide number 12, the maturity date. That's the date on which the bond matures and the principal must be repaid. So you see, you're thinking the loan is going to go down over time. No, that's not how bonds work. Typically, those are called term bonds. They are the most common. So the company will issue 20-year bonds that all mature in 20 years on the exact same date. Right, that's how it works. But there are other types of bonds. There are serial bonds that have series of maturities. So, for example, the company may issue series of 20-year serial bonds with 20 maturity dates. And they all they often do it in 5-year increments. So one quarter of them will mature in 5 years, another quarter in 10 years or 15 years. But they could mature every year. They could have some that mature every year. So a certain portion of the issue would come due and be paid off. Now, typically this is a 20-year bond, but yours is going to be gone in 5 years or 10 years. But sometimes they have a lottery. And whoop, we pulled yours away from us, you know, from you. We pulled yours away. But no, you want to know. I mean, it's part of making a decision, an informed decision about your bond is when it matures. Not that many. Term bonds are the more prevalent. You know the bond is going to be there for 20 years or 10 years or 30, whatever the maturity date is. Now, I made mention to this in the beginning. Technically, there's a difference between a bond and a note. I hate this. This drives me up a wall. Notes mature in 2 to 10 years, whereas bonds mature in 10-plus years. Big deal. I call it the 5-year bond, the 10-year bond, the 10-year treasury bond. It's not the 10-year treasury bond. It's the 10-year treasury note. Who cares? Some bonds mature in 50 years or 100 years, and there are some bonds that never mature. They're called perpetuities, which is a great word you can use to spit on your friends, or consoles. I think, Mexico, just a few years ago, issued 100-year bonds that don't mature for 100 years. So that's, who's got a 100-year time frame? I don't know, not me. But in practice, as it says at the bottom of slide 13, most investors, your humble professor included, use the term bond to refer to both bonds and notes. So if you want to be a stickler, go ahead, yell at me, but I don't care. I use the term bond for everything. But not bills, not treasury bills, not the short term, less than a year. No, those are not bonds. Slide 14. Here we go. Here we're going to describe the call provision. Very important, very important. We need to know whether our bonds are callable or non-callable, because that tells us whether or not the entity that issued the bonds can call the bonds away from us. Here, bonds! Come here, bonds! This is the provision that specifies whether and under what circumstances the issuer, the corporation, the state or local government, the federal government, can retire, prepay the bond prior to the maturity date. And as we said, if interest rates drop, just as a homeowner would want to refinance their mortgage, a bond issuer would want to refinance their bond loans. The issuer calls in the bonds. Come here, bonds! Come on, bonds! The bonds are called away. It's also called prepayment of bonds. All their factors equal, being equal, and they never are, which would you rather have? Right. You would rather, as the investor, prefer non-callable bonds to callable bonds. Okay? So that's what you would prefer. Now, the issuer, they'd rather issue callable bonds just in case interest rates fall, they could refinance. Exactly. So, slide number 15. What are the three types? Well, the first type is freely callable, which means they can call it at any time. They can retire at any time. Non-callable, which means they're prohibited from retiring the bond before the maturity date. And then, typically, if it's going to be callable, there will be a deferred call. a call protection period, a call deferment period, which means they have to wait a certain amount of time. And if you go on the website, or it's in Canvas, there's a couple of muni bond quotes from the newspaper that show you these the call protection periods. They give you a certain amount of time before the bond is called away from you. Most corporate and municipal bonds are freely callable or usually have a deferred call protection period. Treasuries, so far, are always non-callable. The United States government has never issued callable bonds. Which is the least desirable? Which is the most desirable? Well, the least desirable for you as an investor, for us as investors, is freely callable. And the most desirable is to have non-callable bonds, certainly, because if the interest rates fall, you want to be able to continue to earn that interest. Deferred call is in between, right? It gives you a little bit of time. So that's how that works. And realize that, yes, if you're going to find non-callable bonds, exactly, the interest rate's not going to be as high because it's more desirable to the investor. Slide number 16, the call premium. Huh? Well, this is, you could think of it like a prepayment penalty. This is the amount that is added to the bond's par value and paid to investors when a bond is retired prematurely. So, for example, there might be an $85 premium, call premium, which means not only do they have to pay you the $1,000 that they borrowed from you, that you lent to them, they have to pay you $85 as a premium, as a prepayment penalty. If there's no call premium, then the bond is said to be callable at par, at the face value. And typically there is some kind of premium to call away the bond because, hey, you know, you don't want it to be called. That means you're losing out on the interest that they're paying you. But okay, so we'll pay you an extra $30, $50, or $85 or whatever it is. Slide number 17. So now we're coming back to that trickiest part of bond investing, the inverse relationship of interest rates and bond prices. The premium bond is a bond with a market value that is greater than the par value. So the par value is 1,000, but this bond is selling for more than 1,000. When does this happen? When interest rates fall. A discount bond is exactly the opposite. This is a bond with a market value lower than the par value. So this bond has a face value, par value of $1,000, and it's selling for $900. It's selling for less. What's happened? Interest rates have risen. Interest rates rise, the bond prices fall. Now, this also occurs when and if the investment community believes the bond issuer is in danger of defaulting on interest payments or principal payments. It means that people are dumping the bonds. They think the company is going to go under or the municipality is going to go under and the price will fall. If there is no premium, if there's no discount, the bond is said to be selling at par, selling at face value. Are you with me? Now, here's where we ask, wait a minute, Pagnano, this doesn't make any sense. Why would a bond sell at a premium or a discount to its par value? If the loan is for $1,000, wouldn't the bond always sell for $1,000, right? No. The interest rate on the bond doesn't change. It is fixed. That's why we call bonds fixed investments. So since the interest rate doesn't change, the price of the bond changes to reflect the change in the prevailing interest rates within the financial industry. Do you remember the image of the seesaw? Right. The interest rate falls, the bond price goes up. The interest rate rises, the bond price goes down. Because the interest rate on your bond doesn't change. Your interest rate is fixed. But interest rates in the industry are going up and down all the time. You see, it's a little tricky. Your interest rate does not change on your bond. That bond's interest rate doesn't change. But the interest rates behind the bond in the industry, in the prevailing marketplace, are changing all the time. So the price of the bond changes. So let's take a look at an example here. You, on slide number 19, had the genius ability to buy this bond paying 10%. You have to go back to the 1980s to get a bond at 10%, folks. And the bond's face value is $1,000. So what do you get in a year? $100, right? This is how it works, folks. It's a 10% bond, you're getting $100. Now, what happens if interest rates fall to 8%? You see, now bonds are paying $80. 1,000 times 80, right? 1,000 times 8% is $80. You'd have to pay $1,250 to get the same amount of interest. So you're not going to sell your bond for $1,000 because your bond is still paying $100. The interest rate doesn't change. So your bond is now worth more than it was. And if you sold it, which you don't have to do, you're not required to sell it, folks, but if you were to sell it, you would sell it at a premium. You would say, I'm not selling my 10% bond for $1,000 because you have to pay. You folks buying new bonds, you're paying $1,000 and only getting $80 of interest. So you better pay me more for my bond. And if you sold it, you'd have a capital gain. And the same thing is true if the interest rates rise. If that same 10% bond you own is giving you 10% or $100 a year, and now interest rates rose to $12%. What's going to happen? Right. Now bond investors are paying $100 and they're getting $120. Excuse me, of interest. They're getting $120 of interest. So they're not going to pay you $1,000 for your 10% bond. They're going to expect a discount. They're going to expect you to drop the price. Now, you don't have to, folks. Nobody's going to put a gun to your head and make you sell your bond. You can keep getting your 10% until the bond matures, and then you get your $1,000 back. But if you needed to sell it, or if you wanted to sell it now, you're going to take a loss. You'd have a capital loss. Does that make sense? Go back over it two or three or five times before it makes sense, because this is so important. And this is what drives people nuts about bonds. Really, you're not alone. Many people have a lot of problems with this. Slide number 21. The amount of the premium or discount is not only related to the amount of the fall or rise of interest rates. In general, the greater the fall or rise in interest rates, the greater the premium or discount. But the maturity date is also very important. In general, the longer the maturity, the greater the premium or discount. So remember the seesaw? It's a perfect analogy. Do you remember when you were a kid and you were playing on the seesaw? If you are on either end of the seesaw, in this case, if you're way out here on the seesaw, right, and interest rates rise, boom, you fall further. And, of course, if interest rates fell, you'd jump higher. As you go towards the middle, this is zero right here at the fulcrum right there, you bounce up and down a whole lot less. And remember, when we were kids, we used to do this jump in the middle, and the folks on either side would be going way up and way down, but you would just be moving a little bit back and forth. You see? This is why longer-term bonds are riskier than shorter-term bonds, because longer-term bonds are affected much more strongly by the changes in interest rates. So there's a much bigger opportunity for interest rates going down and bond prices going way up the long term. But if interest rates go up, the long-term bonds are going to fall a lot harder. Whereas the short-term bonds, they go up and down a little bit, not much. In fact, as you get closer and closer to maturity, bonds start to look like corporate paper, treasury bills. They start to look like short-term securities because they might be ready to mature in 6-9 months. That's corporate paper. That's a treasury bill. And those are, we know that those are not affected by interest rates because there's just not a whole lot of time. Make sure you understand this. It's very, very important. You can do it. I know you can. You are awesome. Slide 22. Here's a graph from the book, and I would switch it around. I'd put the zero over here. But anyway, as you get closer to the maturity, you see that the discount goes higher and higher and higher. And as you get closer to the maturity, the premium, I'm sorry, did I say higher? Yeah, it goes higher and higher and higher, closer to 1,000. As you go closer to the maturity in zero years, the premium goes down. The farther away you are from the maturity, the premium is higher and the discount is lower, is bigger. So I don't know. This graph helps great. If it doesn't, don't worry about it. But I would have put the 0 over here and the 30 over here. But still, the idea is we're getting closer and closer to the time when the bond matures. We're getting closer and closer to the par value, which is $1,000. The further away we are from the maturity, 30 years or so, the farther away we are from the par value. The greater the premium, the greater the discount. Okay, I hope that makes sense. Slide 23. This is a recap of what we've just discussed. In general, long-term bonds exhibit greater price volatility, but also the greater opportunity for capital gains or losses. Intermediate-term bonds, short-term bonds exhibit lesser price volatility and a lesser opportunity for capital gains or losses. Bonds very close to maturity act very similar to short-term investments such as money markets, CDs, treasury, bills, corporate paper. However, again, as we said already, but we're going to reiterate, if you intend to keep your bonds until they mature, you are not concerned about price volatility. You will always receive the par value of the bond when it matures, except in the rare case of a default. Then you're in trouble. Then we've got serious issues. So does this all make sense? I hope so. Go back and make sure you understand it, because it's very important, folks. And it confuses people no end. And this is why back in Chapter 4 we said that long-term bond funds were riskier than short-term bond funds, with intermediate being in between. Excellent. So that's your homework. Make sure you understand that inverse relationship of bond prices and interest rates. Slide 24. Okay, let's finish now with a slide that should look fairly familiar, because we took a look at this back in Chapter 5 in our introduction to stocks, and now we're looking at it in our introduction to bonds, and we're comparing the yield on bonds and the yield on stocks over the last almost 60 years or so. And we see, if we go back all the way to 1960, you see that the bonds were paying a little bit more. This is the 10-year Treasury bond, by the way. And this is the dividend yield on the Standard & Poor's 500 index, you know, the 500 largest companies traditionally based in the United States. And we see they're fairly close to one another. Bonds are paying a little over 4% or so. Stocks are paying a little under 4%. But then what happens? In the 1970s, we see the inflation start to rise. And inflation is the bondholder's worst nightmare, other than default. And we saw the stock market go down quite a bit right here, right before the 73-74 market crash. And then you see the yield go up. Why? Because the price went down. And we had a very difficult time in the 1970s for various reasons, cultural, technological, but mostly it was the baby boom generation coming of age and going out into the world and creating this huge bubble of population that all needed jobs and cars and houses and shoes, and it created a tremendous amount of inflation. That is when people were terrified to buy bonds. Look, the 10-year peaked at almost 15%. Well, what happened? Then President Jimmy Carter, yes, we had a president named Jimmy, and the Federal Reserve chairperson, Paul Volcker, were very perplexed, very worried about inflation. And Mr. Volcker said to Mr. Carter, "We can do it. We can ratchet up short-term interest rates, which will break the bank. We believe will break the back of inflation,
and it probably will cost you the election. And Mr. Carter, to his credit, said, don't worry about that. You worry about what you have to worry about. You're the second most powerful person in the country, the Federal Reserve chairperson. And they did it. It caused a severe recession. And it not only that, there was another issue that caused Carter's demise, the Iran hostage crisis. But it worked. It worked. And inflation started to come down and bond yields started to come down. And we also saw stock yields coming down. Why? Because people started bidding up the prices and thinking, you know what? I want dividend. I don't want dividends. I want capital gains. And we see what the next Federal Reserve chairperson, Alan Greenspan, called the Great Moderation. We see, for the most part, interest rates falling on bonds. Bonds doing well, right? Interest rates fall, bond prices go up, and stocks doing really, 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 really well. Part of that was technology, the internet, the globalization. Part of it was just people bidding up the prices because they were getting giddy. And we hit, in 2000, March of 2000, the lowest level seen in the S&P 500 dividend, 1%. And there are people who are saying it was going to go 0% because nobody wants dividends anymore. Everybody wants capital gains. Uh-huh. The 2000 to 2002 bear market quickly changed that idea. And then we can still see interest rates somewhat coming down, starting to go right up a little bit right before the Great Recession, and then whammo. Here it is. Here's 2008, where we saw prices on stocks plummet. And the yield on treasury bonds plummet to the point where the dividends of the S&P 500 were higher than the bond yields. And in the depths of the Great Recession, that was an tremendous buy signal. That meant, hey folks, you know, stocks are paying better than bonds. But you had to have the courage to say, okay, I'm going to buy into stocks at the time when people were thinking that we were looking at the abyss, folks. We really were looking at a global seizure where the credit markets had seized up, the bond market being more important than the stock market, in that you got to be able to borrow money to get things done. But did you have the courage to buy stocks at that time? Because look what happened. Stock market responded, the yields went down on the stocks, the yields went back up on bonds, but then it happened again in 2012, which again, if you had the courage, was an excellent buying opportunity because 2013 was a phenomenal year for stocks, and now we're seeing them both bounce along. But this is a little, this ends at 2017. And what we've seen so far is the yield on the 10-year Treasury spike almost up to 3%, but it's come down quite a bit. So when's a good time to be buying bonds? A great time to be buying bonds was when everybody else was terrified of bonds. And when's a good time to be selling? A good time to be selling is when interest rates are very, very low. So, what does that mean for the future? Well, as I think I've told you before, I'm very optimistic about the future, providing we don't blow ourselves up, die in our own ways, start a global trade war, start a global shooting war, meteorite, tsunami, Ebola, disco returning. At the end of 2017, 31 of the 32 largest economies around the world were in growth mode. Folks, it doesn't get much better than this. And yet, every day, the headlines are filled of idiots. I mean, our leaders who are picking fights with the second largest economy. We're the world's largest economy, United States, and we're picking a trade war with the second largest economy. Meanwhile, Putin is laughing and thinking, what an idiot. Oh, I'm so happy I got this guy installed. Anyway, let's not go there, folks. Why don't we come back? Sorry, my apologies. It's hard to not stay political when you have children, petulant, vindictive, stupid children running the show. The world's most powerful economy, the world's most powerful military. Yeah. Anyway, when we come back, my apologies, when we come back, we will now go through the various types of bonds, from the least riskiest to the riskiest. We'll start with treasuries, look at munis, corporate bonds, and then look at some other characteristics of bonds. And yes, bonds are boring, but they're very important and reliable. See you in our next presentation.